And welcome to Motopod. Is that how you pronounce it? Motopod? Motopod. I think that's it.
Motopod.
Oh, really? Okay. The internet radio show or podcast, for those of you in the know, all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode 461 for Wednesday, the 5th of August, 2015. My name is Cameron Riley, and Martin Darlington has invited me on the show because I am the world's leading expert in motorcycle road racing. You might be wondering why you've never heard of me. I'm wondering that myself. So thank you, Martin, for finally recognizing my my true calling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, basically, we've been scouring the world to try and bring it on the leading experts. Mm. I mean, this last weekend, Max Biaggi, what can you say?
Biaggi, yeah, like the way he took that bend and went up and then straight again. Oh, mate, that was gold, fucking gold, mate. I did watch a video about a motorbike yesterday. It was the one with the paddles, and it goes over the water. Did you see that video?
Yes, this guy. Yeah, the
wave rider motorbike.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very, very weird.
No,
he said he thought he was going to die.
I know nothing. I've been on a motorcycle exactly once in my life. I think I was 12, and I fell off, and I've never been on one again. I think they look cool, though. I'd like a Harley, probably a death trap as far as I'm concerned. I'd probably be dead 10 minutes if I got on one of those.
Well, Harleys are fine until you have to go around a corner, and then they're not so good.
Right.
So, everybody, hello. Yes. Yeah, it's me. I'm back in Qatar. And the reason that I've got Cameron on is to really teach Harry, Jim, Jules, Dave, and Len a lesson. Do not let me do these things solo. We had a very nice email recently from a listener called Jarrett Bean. And Jarrett was singing our praise and for some reason said he'd like to hear Martin do a four-hour solo show. Well, I can't promise you 4 hours, but I have brought Cameron on board because Cameron is the podfather of history podcasts. So those of you who wanted to know about bike racing, and we did have BSB and World Superbikes this weekend, which I will speak about in a couple of hours' time. No, in about 5 minutes' time. But I know some of you, Gary Shavitt, Ollie Ford, to name it two, have shown interest in the past in some of the other podcasts out there on different subjects, and you're an eclectic bunch. So I'm going to ask Cameron, basically, to go for a bit of a plug on at least three podcasts that I've listened to that he does on different periods of history. Cameron, go.
Well, wow, what an introduction, Martin. So I am best known in the podcasting world. Well, let me just say this. I recorded the first Australian podcast, started the first Australian podcast back in 2004. So I've been podcasting for 11 years. I started the world's first podcast network, cleverly named the Podcast Network, back in early 2000. I know, we spent months working on that, early 2005. And then in 2006, yeah, I started one of the first ever history podcasts. I think certainly the first history podcast series that I did on Napoleon Bonaparte with my friend J. David Markham. We did that for a few years. I think we did about 60 episodes on the very great Napoleon Bonaparte, who, sadly was treacherously killed under the watch of an evil Brit. But let's not go into that. And these days we're just finishing a series on Big Julie, Gaius Julius Caesar. We're going to kill him off in a couple of weeks, but we've done, I think, about, by the time we kill him off, it'll be 45, 46 episodes, usually running about 90 minutes, sometimes up to 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Yeah. And I think you hit three at least once.
I think there was a three in there, yeah. And then we're also sort of halfway through a series on Alexander the Great, myself and my co-conspirator Ray Harris. So that's what we do every week. I spend hours and hours and hours reading books on Caesar and Alexander and trying to make sense of those stories. And as you can probably gather, as Martin well knows, these are history podcasts that aren't your usual history podcast or history show. There's a fuckload of swearing in them.
Yep.
A lot of dick jokes. The occasional cheesy rock song from the 70s often we sing along to. It's slightly more entertaining than your usual history show because history should be fun.
Yeah, I think the thing I'd like to say about it, and the reason I brought you on and I think I've engaged with your podcast so well, is that our listeners quite often say what they like about Motorsport. We're amateurs. We get some access. We've never interviewed Valentino Rossi, who, in case you didn't know, Cameron, is
a great artist, I think. I've got one of his paintings.
He probably is. It wouldn't surprise me. He's also probably one of the best three motorcycle races ever. But we have quite a bit of access. But what the listeners, guys and girls, like, they said it's like listening to two reasonably well-informed guys down the pub talking about their favourite subject. And that's very much...
Gay sex.
Everything. if the listeners have the slightest interest in history, and actually you don't even have to be interested in history because by the end of it you will be, because you go off on tangents, but they're brilliantly illuminating tangents. Things like, I never knew that Alexander's troops going, how many times we're going to have to cross this bloody river? And the river was called the Meanderus or something. It's where we get the word meander from. You know, things like that, I just think, I love stuff like that. The origins, things we take for granted, finding out where they come from. You know, SDs. I used to see all the ex-England rugby players I follow on Twitter referring to SDs, and I couldn't work it out until someone told me it's Shackle Draggers. And it's, you know, a nickname for Australians, which I found very funny.
I've never heard that. Shackle Draggers, yeah. That's awesome.
Brian Moore, who's, you might remember, a bit of a bulldog.
No.
Brian Moore is a, he's a world champion rugby player. Do you remember when we won the World Cup in 2003?
Mate, the only sport that I follow is annoying Christians. That's my favourite sport.
Actually, closely followed by
annoying American, Republicans. And thirdly is chess. So you want to talk to me about Garry Kasparov or,
see the guy got
Carlsen,
beaten by the computer?
You know.
It was Garry Kasparov. Is he the guy who got beaten by the computer or beat the computer?
He won the first round and lost the second round. Yeah.
Right.
Big blue. Yeah.
So I prefer backgammon because there's an element of luck in it.
Mm.
So it more truly reflects life and warfare, I think.
But just to get back to Shackle Draggers, I mean, the greatest example of how fucking stupid the British are, really, is they thought by sending their lower socioeconomic people they wanted to get rid of so they could keep eating their cucumber sandwiches. They said, you know where we're going to send them? To the greatest fucking untouched paradise on earth. That'll teach them. Punishment. We're going to send them to this land of wide open beaches, beautiful blue skies, coral reefs. Yeah, that's punishment.
I think what the thought process was.
You should have left all the prisoners in England and you should have all moved to Australia. That would have been the smart move.
Possibly, except maybe they'd all watched the back episodes of Crocodile Hunter and thought, shit, there's so many things that can kill you there. This is effectively a death sentence by sort of association. I mean, haven't you got something like 8 of the 10 most poisonous land snakes on the planet and...
Oh, at least.
The biggest crocodiles on the planet. Yeah, I did make me laugh.
We all survive, you know. You just don't step on that one and walk around that one. Unless you're Steve Irwin. He's like, oh, that looks dangerous. I'll see if I can piss it off. Oops.
Yes. Oh, he was brilliant. He was brilliant. And however much people would say, oh, you know, it's a bit sort of staged, but, you know, it's a bit hamming it up.
Yeah.
He engaged so many kids in being interested in the world around us. I think he was a star. And when you read about that bloody stingray, I mean, that was an absolute shot in a million. Really, really unlucky. But, dangling his kid in front of the crocodile maybe wasn't such a smart PR move, but,
That was this boy, I think. His daughter just turned 17, I read the other day, Bindi Irwin. I saw a photo of her online with boobs and makeup. I was like, holy shit, that time.
Called his daughter Bindi.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyway, that's it. So, really, guys, Life of Caesar, it's on iTunes, or you can go to lifeofcaesar.com. Is that right?
Yeah, or juliuscaesar.life.
or Judas Is Not Life, or you can, and The Alexander. Now, The Alexander is a subscription podcast.
Yes.
But it works out at about $1.25 a show, which is, I think, is an absolute bargain, to the point that I actually signed up to a higher level of donation.
Good man. Do you guys make money out of this Metopod show?
No.
You should.
No.
Got it.
No, well, you know, we get donations, but we have a lot of costs, you know, costs of getting someone to races and, you know, Skype and bandwidth and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, you actually send people out on location?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, we go to races. I've done Silverstone twice. I did Qatar at the beginning of this year, and we get interviews with the races. And
that's
we
not hard. You're at Qatar.
Yeah, no, that's not hard at all. And it costs like threepence halfpenny to get in, because otherwise they wouldn't have any fans. But I just say that. No, the MotoGP is pretty well packed. But no, it's great. But I just like doing this cross thing. And now there's loads of seething listeners out there going, are you going to talk about the bikes anytime soon?
Yeah. Yeah, fucking hell, yeah, and get on with the bikes.
And what I might do at the end, I might read a little ditty I wrote for Cameron Ray about Caesar and give you an idea, a taste of what a brilliant poet I am. And also, I'll have had a couple more beers by then because that's tradition. And also, it'll give you an idea what the show's all about. And it is worth listening to. It's, if you like comedy, listen to it. If you like history, listen to it. If you like comedic history, just listen to it.
If you like blowjobs.
Yeah, if you like blowjobs,
go and get one, then come and listen to the show afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. It's very much in – it's history's answer to Moto, or it's history's equivalent to Moto Pod, or we're the equivalent of Life of Caesar. there you go. I've got some bike racing to talk about. So, Cam, I know you're very busy down in Brisbane, so I'm going to cut you loose. You're probably going to go and sit on your patio, smoke a cigar, and dodge flying crocodiles or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I always expect, every week I expect Ray to say, unfortunately, Cameron's met a nasty end from a, you know, funnel web spider or a black widow. Or
what you got to watch for is when the crocodile's riding the kangaroos. When that happens, that's when you need to get the fuck off the streets.
No, that's when you need to stop smoking, whatever it is you're smoking. I did like your comment with the Aussie surfer who smacked the great white on the nose in South Africa, and you went, if that had been an Aussie bloody great white, he'd have had no chance.
Yeah, yeah. South African great whites, they're pussies.
Cheers, Cameron.
Thank you, MD. Much.
And I'll speak to you soon.
All right, ciao.
Shut up. Okay, so it's just me now. Cam's gone, and I really would recommend that you have a listen to his podcast with Ray Harris. Ray also does a World War II podcast. Cam did the Napoleon podcast with Professor David J. Markham, American professor and president of the Napoleonic Society. I mean, you know, Napoleon's a bit of a loser, bit of a Frenchie, but hey, if that's floats your boat. Anyway, we had World Superbikes were in Sepang and BSB were at Thruxton. We've also had quite a bit of news. Now, we do also have two interviews, which Jim managed to get. We've got Jonathan Ray and Tom Sykes. But at the time of the interview, this was Laguna Seca. So this was pre-Malaysia. So what I think we'll do at the end of the news, we'll run those interviews, get Harry to slot them in. And so you can listen to them. And this was pre-Sepang. And then we'll talk about the Sepang races themselves. So the news as at today, which is actually Tuesday the 4th, but we're getting ahead of schedule this week. Hopefully we'll get this out Wednesday or Thursday. Tiger Tony is back. Tony Elias, former MotoGP and World Superbike rider, and of course the first Moto2 champion. Tony's going to stand in for Carol Abraham at Indy. Be interesting to see how he gets on with Bridgestones after his fairly disastrous season a few years back, coming up back up from Moto2. And he'll be replacing Carol Abraham, who still hasn't recovered from his injured hand. There's also been all the Ford Racing debacle. Their team boss arrested, facing charges, and Loris Baz will not be, well, the Ford Racing team will not be at Indy for sure. We'll wait to see what happens after that. But they've released Stefan Bradl by mutual agreement from his contract. And he's gone across to Aprilia Racing Team Grassini, replacing Michael Laverty, who was trying to juggle being Aprilia's test rider and racing in BSB and doing MotoGP, because he was replacing Marco Melandri, who's probably on a beach somewhere. So despite the short notice, Grassini have confirmed that Bradl will be racing at Indy this weekend. Remember, he's coming back from injury as well. He's now got to go from a Honda from a Yamaha to an Aprilia, having gone from a Honda to a Yamaha. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. And there are rumours that Leopard, Danny Kent's Moto3 team, are looking at buying Ford Racing. Now, that will be interesting. In BSB, Australian Jason O'Halloran broke his femur and his left hand during qualifying, and he's basically lost any realistic chance of making the showdown. Can't see him back for Cadwell, which is really bad because there's not a transfer window in the NCN fantasy team between now and then. And guess what? I've got Jason O'Halloran in my team. Jason, sorry, I probably jinxed you. Spoiler alert, in case none of you realised, Johnny Ray, all he needs in any one of the six remaining races at three different venues in World Superbikes, he just needs 1/10th place, and that's his first world title. He's won 12 races. Chaz, the most, if Chaz Davis won everyone from now to the end of the season, the most he could get is 10 wins. So even if they tie on points, Johnny takes the title. So I think he should be able to do that. In really sad news, reigning World Supersport champion Kenan Sofwoglu lost his four-month-old son a week before Sunday's race. His son had been ill. Some of you may have remembered that. In previous races, there was sometimes doubt if Kenan would be able to make it. But it shows the mettle of the man, I think, that he came and competed. He qualified on the front row, and as you'll hear later on, he finished fourth after a very eventful race. And by his standards, that's a disappointing result. His racing style has definitely divided fans and commentators, but you have to respect his courage. We covered in the last episode, or Harry and Dave covered, Isaac Vinales had been chopped by Husqvarna, but he's stepping in for Anna Carrasco. So we've got a silly season going on within the season, which is surprising because there's been not much movement, certainly in the MotoGP class, about next year. But if you want to know why, go and read David Emmett's excellent article on it in two parts on motomatters.com, and it kind of explains it all. Tech Trois have also been changing. They chopped Ricky Cardoose after he failed to score a point in the first nine races, and he's going to be replaced by Xavi Vierge, a CEV Moto2 race winner. Xavi has been racing a Mistral 610 in the CEV in the first five rounds. He's scored a win and three other podiums, so he obviously knows the bike and he's making it go fairly well, so we'll see how he gets on. Nicola Canepa, World Superbikes, he's going to have to go to court later in the autumn because there was an incident at a track day where there appeared to be some kind of altercation between Canepa and another rider. And as they were riding very close together, the other rider crashed, broke his collarbone. He's now saying there was a criminal action. We don't know, but there is a video you can find out there. World Superbike rider headed to trial. I think we might put the link in the show notes and you can be your own judge. So, more news. Cameron Beaubier, who many of you will know from AMA. He raced the German IDM Championship last weekend alongside teammate Kev Coughlan. Coughlan was badly injured in race two. He's broken six vertebrae and has ended his season. Ouch. He had been racing in Superstock Thals with Yamaha. It was a DNA for Cameron in race one, but he got a fourth in race two on an unfamiliar street-type circuit with Yamaha MGM squad at Schleiser-Dreieck. I assume that's the name of the circuit. Cameron's currently tied with points with teammate Josh Hayes in the Graves Yamaha squad in Moto America Series. And they've only got three rounds left, six races, of course. Many of you who follow the antics and heroics of Mark Miller, friend of the show, will know that he was meant to go and race an electric bike at the Nürburgring circuit. Mark was posting us information on it, and he was doing it for www.motoeracing.com. That's all one word, moto, the letter E, and then racing. But technical difficulties prevented him racing, even though he'd done really well qualifying. But he's going to the Isle of Man for the Manx Classics, where he's hoping to race a, in Jim's words, gorgeous Kawasaki ZXR 750 in a few short weeks. So we'll keep our eyes out for that. Jim, if it's in that disgusting vomit pea green, it can't be gorgeous. We've also got Brendan Creighton, who's at the Ulster Grand Prix this weekend, despite a fairly serious supermoto crash, which has left him with a titanium rod in his leg and a few screws loose in his head. I'm not sure if that's a joke. Jim's been at the show notes, I suspect after he'd been at his bottle of bourbon. Hobbling about on his cane, we'll have to see if he's getting up to, if he's up to getting the Bimota DB3 about the one of the fastest real roads course in a few days' time. World Superbikes after Sepang, they've now headed off for the summer break 6 weeks before there's another World Superbike race. And lastly, in the spirit of victory celebrations gone wrong, cue Alvaro Bautista at Brno in the 250s a few years ago when he looped, attempting to do a wheelie, and then very sheepishly, with a wry smile, apologised to the team on the winner's interview. Josh Brooks managed to drop his bike during his celebratory burnout at Thruxton, which might give you a clue as to how he got on. So without further ado, I think what we'll do now, let's listen to Jim's interviews with Johnny Ray and Tom Sykes. At the time of speaking, this was first Johnny Ray leading and Tom Sykes second, but with Chas Davies closing in behind him in the championship race. So this was them, I believe, post Laguna Seca races, and we'll put that in now. Zoom.
Jim Race here for Motopod with Jonathan Ray of the Factory Kawasaki team. Jonathan, 18 races this season, 18 podiums. That's not a bad record.
Yeah, modest. I think it's a really quite a good one, to be honest. We kind of set our sights at the start of the year on our some goals, and one was to primarily to finish every race, but so far to finish on the podium has been incredible. But I mean, I feel like that's where we should be, because the bike and the team and the package is so strong. So I'm really, really happy. I've got a great people around me. So when it comes to the race, I mean, that seems to be our position, podium right now. But we still have, you know, 4 rounds to go. It would be really nice to continue that trend to the end of the year.
Well, I mean, look at this, honestly. You've got a 125-point lead. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, you can sew up the championship this weekend. Are you? Does that change your mindset, or are you just focused on winning races?
Of course it does now, because right now it's a reality that win the championship. It's not just some pipe dream. For sure, changing our mentality a little bit. We have to play the long game a little bit, because whilst it's important to win races for my motivation and for you know, marketing and everything, it's to win the championship, because when you get and it's the one in the future when people are so
yep.
Be able to put myself in the position win races, but it's not at all costs anymore. We need to be playing. I only have to finish behind Tom in the next 4 races and we can be champion. So we need to be clever, remain healthy, and you know, we need to take it, but it's not win at all costs anymore, because we need to play the long.
Right. I would assume or hope that your contract has win bonuses.
Yeah.
I mean, you deserve it at this point. I did ask our listeners for some questions, so I want to pose some of these to you, because our listeners are very discerning. Was your move – this is from a gentleman named Phil Mayhew. Was your move from Honda a difficult decision, given your loyalty up to that point, and whether you could go back there again? And this kind of is going to tie into another question that I have about – your future.
I got being difficult to leave Honda, and yes, true, because I had a great time, not so much Honda, but with the team and all the people from Honda Europe. because they really supported me from the start of my career. So it was a big decision. And from the other side also, to a team like Kawasaki, where they've been so dominant, and, you know, with winning the championship in, you know, 2013, was betting on myself to come here and win, because if I hadn't have won it, if I hadn't like won a good job and put myself in a championship position, then I was kind of outed, you know, because people talked about me before having a lot of potential. You know, maybe a little bit like the, you know, with my social media, with Twitter and whatnot, you know, a lot of telling me that maybe I was being a little bit held back before. So I went into the winter knowing that if I didn't do a good job, it was really not a good in my career. I would see it as a stall. So it was a massive decision to come here. I was really betting on myself, but I'm kind of really happy it worked out so far.
So here's a follow-up. Given your dominance this year, do you have a defined path to go to GP? And is that where you really want to go right now? I mean, when you went before in 2012, you got an eighth in San Marino, you got a seventh at Aragon, which is great. Is that where you want to land?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we understood what a job we did back then, but right now I'm 28. I think I've missed the boat a little bit to go there and be really competitive. And I mean, it's not just some marketing that I put on my quotes about wanting to go there and do a good job. It's really true. You know, I'm the biggest, well, most, where the best, some of the best riders are, and do a bad job. So, I mean, right now for me, Cal, platform to be super competitive. I've got a good team, so right now I've got, I mean, I don't see there being a really competitive opportunity to go there, so I'm just happy for a good bike and super bike, and it's kind of all I'm really thinking about now. This winning feeling we're having this year as a team is incredible, so, you know, I see my future in super bike for the foreseeable future anyways.
Yep, and frankly, it's brilliant and that Kawasaki has stepped up to the fore. I'd love to see them in GP, but we'll see how that goes. One thing that I have to ask you, it wasn't that long ago that nobody really wanted to ride the ZX10. The bike always had a ton of power, but for a long period of time, it had, you know, inherent handling woes. Kawasaki fixed that brilliantly. And now a third of the grid is green, right? Your teammate did a lot of the primary development and won a lot of races in the process. Is it odd to you that you're at the top step so much?
Definitely not, because, I mean, I think that most of the credit goes to KHI themselves. That model light in, I'm not exactly sure, maybe 2012 was, 2011, 2012. It was a bike more geared towards a racing machine than their previous model. So,
right.
I think it's hard to give all the credit to my teammate, because Kawasaki did a great job. Sure, Tom and his crew and, you know, the whole team done here at you know, Pro developed the bike with the back at KHI. I mean, you've seen from, you know, Tom's results in the past 3 years, it's one of the most competitive packages. So, I mean, when I've grown up racing with Tom, I understand his levels. I knew that I could do a really good job too on this bike. And my first ride on the bike in Aragon test, I remember the smile on my face after the first run. It was, I knew that we were going to be in a position to fight for a championship for real.
The Labrador's and Tom and Haslam and everybody else are all kind of part of the same part of the country. And you, I know that you do hang out and you go trials riding and things like that. It's a very small world as far as the Brits go, which is amazing this year that you all are at the top of the pop. I've never seen so many British podiums before. It's got to be fun for you.
Yeah, it's super fun, especially, we kind of grew up together. And I mean, it's kind of a testament to the BSB championship class of sort of 06, 07, 08, because I mean, that was a year where all them like Laverty, Crutchlow, Hikes, Camier, myself, even, you know, Shane Burns dominating in BSB, that year, them years were very strong. See strong years like that, it's it kind of sets it apart. And it's in the BSB championship, it's still at a really, really high level. But I think the sort of super sport class of that is the next big generation of fast kids. So it's it's cool. I'm just privileged to be part of that championship and in that era, because it brought me on as a rider, and I coming to work in the World Championship, it's not as daunting as it was when I first started, where I was the, you know, one of the only British guys along with Craig Jones to be world. Mm. You know, the following year, some other Brits follow. It seems like a much more list.
Yeah, you mentioned Craig, and I kind of cringed when you said that, because he was certainly on the radar to be a top rider. I'm curious, so Tenkata took very good care of you during the time that you were with that team, both in Super Sport and Superbike. What is that much different between the ZX-10 and the Fireblade?
The biggest difference is this, they have technically from, you know, each manufacturer, you know, a fully supported effort, so all the resources and development, and whilst we're doing it, all being developed in a factory by experienced engineers in Japan, whereas with it's pretty much, you don't get the level of respect they deserve, because it pretty much is a team run out of a bike and you lose them. So they've got some very guys that were able to make that bike so competitive with little or no help from Honda Japan. Surely they're supported quite heavily by a Honda marketing budgets and whatever. And, you know, I'm really grateful. But when you're part of a real factory team, you kind of understand the difference where, you know, the bike's pretty much built from the ground in Japan, and you have test riders that are riding specifically to develop products for you. So it's kind of, it just feels like being a part of something bigger and something that really is quite special. So it's been my first experience of that, and I was kind of lapping it up when I first came, when I asked modifications on, for example, my rear brake lever. They would just make a brake lever. It wasn't like we had to contact suppliers to get them to change something. It was like, oh yeah, we'll send this to the next test, and it'll be like a Jonathan Ray Park number. It was really, really cool to be part of that.
Very cool. Very cool. Just on a slightly off-topic note, your lap at the TT, rather impressive. Normally, I think the average lap time for parade laps is around 65 to 70 miles an hour. You lads went just a little bit quicker.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was a parade lap, but I mean, I know this bit because I lived there, and I know Milky Quail quite well, the track marshal that led us around, and, you know, former TT racer. So I kind of said to Milky at the start, "Hey, man, this isn't going to be like some 65 mile an hour lap. We can give it some." And he says, "Well, how about I go as fast as I can to keep you in my mirrors, and if I drop you, I'll slow down." And I said, "All right." I said, "That sounds like a good plan." So I kind of welded myself to his rear bump. Yeah, we had a really good, get much chance to wave at all the fans around the track, but it was a great experience for me, because it gave me the appreciation of, you know, how great these guys really are. And the race gets branded mad and crazy and dangerous, but I mean, when the guys on how fast they actually have to go, they're like some of the most skillful guys in the world, because it's got so much to deal with blind corners and the changing of asphalt. curves, walls, everything, and they navigate through it pretty well. Sure, sometimes it doesn't work out, and it's on the negative side. But I mean, for me, the clarity after the lap was how good and skillful he's riding.
And your time, if I remember correctly, was 109 and some odd. Have you ever, and this was not on my list of questions asked, but have you ever thought of doing real roads?
Because, like I said, when the MotoGP Superbike question, I grew up CC motocross, winning right. races at home in Ireland, and I ride bikes not because I just enjoy riding. To be competitive, and I don't know if it's something my father installed in me. So when I to go and do road racing, it would be to be really competitive. And I don't have that burning desire on the roads because I know the level of commitment you need to do that, and I'm not prepared to do that because I just don't have the burning desire in my heart to put myself out there to be competitive on the road. So I'm not really ashamed to admit that, but it's where it's at. And besides, I'm having way too much fun in Superbike right now.
I think at this point right now, you have something very good that you can focus on. And frankly, I'm looking forward to Monday, or actually Sunday afternoon, when you can celebrate your world championship, because I have a feeling it's going to happen. It was funny when I talked to Chaz about the TT lap, he was like, yeah, they left me in the dust. I think he was a little bit disappointed.
Yeah. It's kind of why I welded myself to his rear bumper, because then I, to milk his rear bumper, because I realized where I was going. And I mean, as soon as Chaz got lost, you've got no idea of the corners. So the brake light on his bike was obviously pressure sensorized. You know, the brighter it was, the harder he was braking, so I was able to get a really good gauge of, you know, where to go, and understood the track well, so I was kind of happy. Tom showed me a wheel I went through, but I went back past because I just really wanted to understand the lap and go to stay behind Melky.
Nice. I need to let you go. Do you still have any interest in motocross? Would you ever try and do like a motocross racing again?
I think as soon as I'm not competitive in road race anymore, I can see myself on that championship somewhere just for fun, because it's a big part of my training and how I grew up. So I'll always go back to my roots and ride there.
Cool. But been a long time. But when I say a long time, 1997 was, I think, when you started road racing. All right. Well, Jonathan, thank you very much. Best of luck this weekend. I know Sepang is going to be crazy hot. I'll have you know it's 38°C here in the Bay Area, so it stayed hot. But you're going to have even more with more humidity. So take it easy. Make sure you keep cool. And I wish you the best of luck this weekend.
All right. Thanks, Jim. See you later.
All right. Cheers, mate. All right. Tom.
How are you doing?
Good. You know me from before. I think the last time I talked to you was you were at the airport in South Africa in like 2012 or something like that.
2000, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, let me fire right into this and I'll get you back to the work at hand.
Perfect.
Jim Race here for Motopod with Tom Sykes, Factory Kawasaki team. Tom, you have the honor, if you will, of having come in second with the slimmest margin ever, a half point, and that was 2012, I believe?
Yeah.
I have to ask, what was that like?
Well, half a point certainly doesn't make it feel any better, but yeah, I mean, it was a shame. We worked so hard, came from a long way back, and, you know, we almost got our dream sooner than we could have imagined. So, you know, really a game and one that, you know, I really enjoyed.
Yep. Well, and one thing that's kind of cool is the protagonist from that year, that being one Max Biaggi, is going to be back this weekend, and you get to race against him again. And I have a feeling this time he's not messing around. He was sixth when he raced earlier this year, but I know that he was there for some testing, even though the weather was not behaving.
Yeah. I mean, correct. I mean, to be honest, it's, you know, he's not stupid, and he's gone for the... he had a four-day test here, and, you know, the Aprilia works really well in Misano, also works really well here in Sepang. So, for sure, there's method in his madness, and I expect him to be competitive. I'd be very surprised if he wasn't competitive.
Yep. You have a tall task in front of you this year, and your teammate, who I spoke to earlier today, and basically, my personal opinion is that you developed the bike that he's now doing so well on, has a 125-point lead, and that's near insurmountable. But I'm sure you're going to be after him big time this coming weekend.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, I feel very honored. You know, lots of people put myself and a couple of, obviously, team members and Kawasaki, you know, behind the development of the bike that you see today. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think we've done a great job. We've seen now how many people can jump on the bike and be fast. So it's no secret that Jonathan's a very talented rider, and he's done a great job this year. So, you know, for me, unfortunately, we've had three technical issues this year in the race to really hurt our championship. And, you know, like I said, we get along with the new rules quite as fast as I was hoping. So we've got a lot of ground to make up. Yes, it's not really realistic, but at the end of the day, it's racing and anything can happen. So we had a good race in Laguna last time out, and we just need to keep working. Now I feel that we're getting a little bit better with the machine setup.
Yep. I'm sorry that I missed you, Laguna. I was there. You probably got a little bit of practice with the surprise heat and humidity on Sunday that might, you know, give you good stead for this weekend, because you know it's going to be hot.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm in a nice air-conditioned environment at the moment, but when we're outside, it's a little bit fruity, you know, the humidity and the temperatures, something that's not like England. But in Laguna, Sunday was unbelievable. The temperature was not really high, but the humidity was crazy, something I've never experienced there.
Yeah, and I've been going there for 30 years, and I've never seen weather like that there. And I was taken aback.
Yeah, that's a... global warming for you.
Yeah, I know. talk to me about your plans for the weekend, and then secondarily, I do want to give you a pat on the back, because it wasn't that long ago that the ZX-10 was a bike that nobody wanted to ride, and now a good third of the grid are riding them because they are the bike to be on. I'm curious how you went about your development, and I'm curious what you're up to this weekend.
Yeah, basically, you know, like I said, I feel very privileged, because like you've just mentioned, 4 years ago, nobody wanted to touch the ZX-10R. So, you know, I kind of stuck to my guns. You know, I had a strong mindset, and we went about our business. You know, I feel very lucky that I can ride a motorcycle, and to get to the next level, I understand what's needed, you know, especially from the bike, but also from myself. And, you know, there's one thing for sure. It's like this year, we might not struggle at the beginning of the year, but, you know, at the end of the year, for sure, we will get to where we need to be. But, you know, you've only got to look at the grid now. There's so many Kawasakis, and then even in British superbikes and superstock classes, you know, the grids are full of ZX-10. So, you know, that's not for no reason. There's a reason behind that. And like I said, many manufacturers are very strong in some areas, but I feel that we've developed the ZX-10R to be you know, a good package across all areas. Maybe not the best in any, but certainly a good level in every area. So I think this gives us our balance. And like I said, I definitely feel that I'm buying some of that.
Yep. Well, so what's your plan for this weekend?
Yeah, basically to try and keep fine-tuning the bike, get it better than the last race, and, you know, try and make my life a little bit easier. So, you know, there's areas that we need to look at on the bike to enable me to do what I would like to do. You know, because most of this year I feel like I've been riding the bike instead of racing it. Mm. But that's just because I feel very restricted.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that it's not really a race bike, you know. It's more of, it certainly is more of a production bike now. And that's taken me some time to adjust, you know. Before I was able to brake really hard and get the bike in and out the corner as fast and effective as possible. A bit like what you see now in Moto Grand Prix, but unfortunately, you know, we've taken a step back and everything's a little bit more, let's say, linear here in the superbike. So that's really hurt my, you know, chase for the championship.
Yep. And frankly, that leads to a question that is burning on everybody's mind. Electronics and the way that the rules have gone. What is your particular take?
Yeah, I mean, the electronics are, you know, essentially almost the same as last year. And, you know, but certainly the clamping down, you know, we have one bike, which for me is absolutely ludicrous. You know, one bike in a world championship. Yeah, they're trying to make it equal, but, you know, I'm sorry, but when I was younger and trying to get my way to the top, I'd have one bike and the factory boys would have two bikes. And that's just the way that the bread's buttered. So yep. I worked extra hard to get myself to the factory position so I could have two bikes because, you know, mistakes happen, accidents happen, and you want to be able to off that bike onto your spare bike and keep the information flowing.
Right.
So the way things have gone, you know, we're in 2015. Things develop, you know. I feel we've taken a step back in time with the rules, essentially. You know, like I said, it's 2015. Things develop, and, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we couldn't have this conversation. But because of technology and because of development, we're able to have this conversation over Skype today. So for me, that puts racing in a nutshell. Everything goes forward. You know, we used to develop things, and you'd get that on the road bike. But now, you know, in some aspects, some of the road bikes are almost more advanced than the superbike. So really quite strange the way things have gone. And, you know, I'm not a fan of it. But if I ever mention I'm not a fan, then people tend to not like me as much. So you've got to be careful what you say.
Yeah, whatever. my personal point of view is keep up or get out of the way.
Yeah, correct.
Yep.
And I'm the same.
Yeah. The weather there, I'm assuming, is it's normal, horrendous, high humidity, very, very hot.
Correct.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it, like you say, it's not like jolly old. You are going to be suffering just a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be suffering, sure, on the bike, you know, because there's no fresh air that comes at you and, you know, various things, and it's very physical. But, you know, the worst thing is when you stop racing, you have the you have to go to, if you have a good race, you have to go to the winner's circle.
Right.
Then you have the podium celebration. Then you have interviews. So, you know, in some instances, it would be nice for the organisers just to really consider the riders. You know, the riders as well as the bikes need fuel, and you know, but again, because we have two races, obviously. If it was one race, it's not a problem. But sometimes we get held back such a long time that we have an hour from when we arrive back to the garage to when we need to be on the grid. And you can imagine 1 hour to get out of your leathers, have a little relax, get refueled, and get back into your leathers. It's not really a long time. So there's that. That's the main kind of point of concern that I'll be considering on Sunday for the heat.
Yeah, and especially when you're done with the race too, and your leathers are soaked with champagne. Now, I was at Laguna. I was at Parc Fermé and in front of the podium for both races. And while it was hot, actually, race two wasn't so bad. I suspect that you were probably a bit tired after that as well. Now, all that being said, the paddock deal that Michael Hill does is brilliant with you guys. I love that.
Yeah. He did it. Go on, sorry.
Well, it's got to be fun for you as a racer because it's your chance to interact with regular people.
Correct, yeah. No, the paddock show is great. And like you said, after race two, that was actually not too bad. You know, the humidity seemed to lift a little bit. And it was race one. You know, race one was the, let's say, the most sticky part of the day. But certainly when you've finished race two, you know, you know it's not essential to be chasing your tail in order to be fully prepped for another race. So, you know, you can relax a little bit and certainly go and spend time with the fans in the paddock show, and especially in America, you know, those guys are fantastic. So it is something that's really, really enjoyable.
I do have to ask you, I've done a few laps around Laguna. I was just a crappy punter racer, but I've never done it in the wet. What is it like in the wet?
Yeah, it's not too bad. I was expecting it to be really greasy, to be honest. But honestly speaking, it offered fairly good grip. But certainly going over turn one and the corkscrew for the first time, I certainly played it a little bit safe, yeah.
you clenched up a bit?
Just a little bit more than usual, yeah.
All right, mate. Well, listen, you have yourself a great weekend. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk out with Motopod. No problem. Be safe and keep yourself cool. Find some indoors with air conditioning.
No, you would. You look after yourself and we'll be okay over here.
All right. Cheers, mate. Be well.
Top man. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
So there we go. Fascinating stuff. So we went to Sepang and it was tight at the top between number two and three in the championship. Chaz having done the double at Laguna, but it wasn't for the leader. Johnny Ray still with his absolutely, you know, phenomenal lead. But somehow it's not making the season less interesting. I don't know why. Well, Superbikes maybe is getting something right this season. I don't know. And of course, we also saw the return, having previously popped up two rounds ago, of Max Biaggi, the elder statesman, the pirate, as one of the commentators insist on calling him. I think that was just his rather strange title celebration in 2010. I can't remember which year it was when he won the World Superbike Championship and he had this strange dressing up as a pirate. The Roman Emperor, the annoying little bastard who most Rossi fans still detest, but it was great to see him back and he did play a part in the weekend. In qualifying, we'll just very quickly go through the front row was Tom Sykes on pole, Jordi Torres and Sylvain Guintoli on the front row. Then we had Biaggi, Alex Lowes and Chaz Davis, the second row. Johnny Ray only qualifying in seventh. Leon Haslam and Nicola Canepa, and so on down. The first race, it was basically what we've got used to seeing. We had a breakaway group of the two Kawasakis, Tom Sykes and Johnny Ray and Chaz Davis. But Tom absolutely took off like the proverbial scalded cat. He just went out the blocks and just went for it. And afterwards, Johnny Ray said he simply could not keep up with him. He wasn't even going to try. But he was fairly confident that Tom would come back to him later on in the race. And that's what proved to happen. And we had Chaz and Johnny sort of stuck with each other. Chaz leading, Johnny pretty much on his rear wheel the whole way round. Behind them, Max Biaggi started in fourth, dropped back in a tussle in a three. He had his own three ship with the two Aprilias, the Red Devil Aprilias of Jordi Torres, having a great ride, and Leon Haslam, who was sticking with them. And so it went until something really strange happened. In lap 12, or in laps like 9, 10, and 11, Tom Sykes was losing something like a second and a half to 2 seconds a lap to the following pair of Chaz and Johnny. And they went past him, and he went backwards like he was standing still. He was third going into the last lap, which he finished in fifth, having been passed by Johnny Ray, Chaz Davis, Biaggi, who got a podium, came third. Sylvain Guintoli got fourth, and then there was Tom in fifth, just ahead of Alex Lowes. It was incredible. Both Leon and Yordi Torres dropped back. Yordi Torres quite dramatically. His tyres really did drop off. It was incredibly hot, as it always is at Sepang, and humid. So they're difficult conditions for them to work with. But what we did have, we had Johnny Ray did an absolutely masterful pass on Chaz Davis. Actually pulled out about half a second. Clearly didn't realise. And if you picture Sepang, you know, you've got the penultimate straight onto the home straight and then this almost 180 degrees, about 150 degree hairpin onto the final straight. Johnny braked really late, actually outbraked himself. Chaz got inside him, must have thought, woohoo, it's Christmas. But because Johnny had gone so wide, he had a much straighter line, got the bike stood up and absolutely pelted it out of there and comfortably took Chaz and took the win. So it was quite dramatic. There was quite a lot of last corner drama there. So we had Johnny Ray, Chaz Davis, Max Biaggi. Max on the podium was good to see, and he really did seem to enjoy himself. Good to see Sylvain Guintoli back up there. Non-finishers were Viziello and Michael van der Mark. He still seems to be, you know, does really well or does really badly, doesn't do in between. Race two, very similar from the start. They absolutely pelted off, except Tom Sykes didn't finish the first lap anywhere. He was down in, goodness me, 14th place because somebody, we think possibly Sylvain Guintoli, pushed Max Biaggi wide. Max then crashed and he was out of the race. He was DNF'd. And he pushed Alex Lowes and Tom Sykes really wide. And they never really recovered. Tom did, but then he later on, he crashed again, dropping down to, good God, 19th position before fighting his way up to finally finish 14th. Alex Lowes, very creditable 8th, having to had his fight his way back through. But that's Tom's title hopes pretty much gone. In fact, they are mathematically gone. He can't catch Johnny, even if he were to win every race now. So tragedy for Tom Sykes. It really must have been a really difficult two seasons now. But last year, at least he took it to the last race. And however pissed off he was at Loris Baz for not following team orders. Loris, you are my hero for that. I love you. Too tall. Or not too tall, as he keeps saying. Yeah, I mean, at least he got it close. This year, he has had a teammate arrive who, in top-level competitive riding, has never ridden anything but Hondas, and he's jumped on his Kawasaki, and he's made it sing. I mean, Johnny Ray has been masterful, and he strikes me as a really nice guy. I mean, a lot of them are, and it's really good to see that. But you do have to think, if Tom Sykes can bounce back from this and be competitive again next season, then, you know, he's got a serious bit of Yorkshire spine going, running down the centre of his back. And I hope he does, because he's entertaining to watch riding, and he's a talented rider. So, meanwhile, up front, we had the Johnny and Chaz show again. This time, Chaz led for a lot longer, and he actually pulled away, but you could see his tyres start to go off towards the end. And again, Johnny Ray, so smooth. I can't remember who was talking to us the other day. I think it might have been on Facebook or an email, I can't remember, and was saying, you know, that Johnny's so smooth. And certainly I was kind of, well, hang on, he wasn't on the fire blade, but yeah, he was really preserving his tyres well. He can certainly run it ragged when he needs to. But he closed them down, and during the last lap, He actually got past Chaz as they came to the final corner. And again, there was a little bit of argy-bargy. They did touch. But this time, Chaz got the drive out the corner and beat them to the line. Johnny looked pretty unhappy initially. But I guess he's got to be. You know, what it's fantastic to see a guy with the lead in the title that he's got, and he is still up front battling for wins. You know, I certainly can't see anybody having anything untoward to say about the way Johnny's conducted himself this season. And he afterwards, you can read it on World Superbike website. He said, "I'd have done exactly what Chaz did." I think Johnny didn't want to completely close the gap and running really tight because obviously you're so slow coming out. He was worried that the Ducati could drive past him, so he didn't completely shut the door. Chaz saw a little gap, went in there, a little bit of dinking, and they were both completely on the ragged edge. Behind them, Jordi Torres got his first podium. I think it's his first podium, but anyway, he came in third. A pretty lonely race towards the end for Jordi. And behind him, we had a three-way battle going on all race between Gintoli, Van der Mark, and Haslam. And obviously, Leon came out at the back end of that one. Van der Mark picked him on the last lap. But yeah, excellent race again. Even though, if you look at the lap chart, it doesn't look that exciting. It certainly was. So happy days. Very entertaining and set us up nicely for the rest of the day. But what that means, as we mentioned earlier, Johnny Ray has got 144-point lead over Chaz Davies, and there are only 150 points left available. Wow, wow, oh my blinking god, wow. I mean, that is just crazy. He needs to come 10th or better in one of the remaining six races. So I think if you went to a betting shop and try to put any money on Johnny Ray, they'd just laugh at you. Go, yeah, I think we're going to close the book. They probably did it a little while ago. We also had a World Supersport race, which was really, really good. If you haven't seen a World Superbike races, it is worth watching them, but I'd watch the first. I do like Formula One. Watch the first lap and maybe the last two or three laps, whereas with Formula One, it's like the last lap, the first lap and the last lap, you know. And you can go and have a three-course dinner with your wife in between, or husband, or girlfriend or boyfriend, or just friend. You'd have to talk about gay sex, as Cameron was suggesting that bike fans at pubs do, something like that. So Johnny Ray is absolutely nailed on as champion. You'd be an idiot to bet against him. Chaz is 13 points clear of Tom Sykes, but that 13 points does bridge the gap between mathematically possible to still win the title and mathematically impossible. Be interesting to see how the Ducati does at Jerez. You know, Manicor as well, LaSalle, he should do well. But yeah, I'm sure that Tom will want to come back and at least secure second place. And what a kudos for the team. First and second, thank you very much. Boom. And my answer to that would be, get your asses back into MotoGP. Come on, you can do it. So, in the World Super Sport, sorry, me hesitating as I read ahead, PJ Jacobsen got pole position, Keenan Sofwoglu second, Jules Cluzel third. So the three protagonists at the top of the table. And it's really impressive how close Jacobsen is to the two leading guys, considering that they seem to have dominated all the wins. Robbie Rolfo, fourth. Great to see. I think he's probably old enough to be my dad, and I'm 50 this year. So Robbie seems to have been around forever. So in the race itself, we had a very, very good start by PJ. And he led off, and although he didn't lead the entire race, he did finish every lap in the lead. And Jules Cluzel finished every lap in second. And that was obviously how it finished, first and second. But that makes it sound really processional and dull. It wasn't. It was really quite exciting, and there was a lot of leader changes, particularly early on. We had Kyle Smith was up there battling in the early laps. Gino Rea wasn't too far away from that. Quite a good leading group. And then it started to spread out. And, of course, we had Keenan Sofwoglu. Made his way up to third, but then was pipped right at the end by Lorenzo Zanetti, who came through on the MV Agusta. So we had Cluzel and Zanetti, second and third. Double MV Agusta on the podium. Probably not been seen since the days of Giacomo Agostini, although someone's probably going to tell me, no, it happened 2 weeks ago when they lasted. I don't know. So they're very entertaining races.
Suffolk, who still leads on 168 points. Clouzel is 13 points behind, 155. And, of course, they only have one race per meet. So there's only 75 points left available, but that is definitely doable. Peter Jacobson, 140. Let's not forget, Peter Jacobson started the season on a Kawasaki and he's now gone to a Honda. And I'm just thinking, because he quite easily, mathematically, could win the title, would that make him the first ever world champion who swapped manufacturers in mid-season? One for Dr. Martin Rains, but I keep forgetting to ask him. So, yeah, that'd be interesting to see. The other thing we had going on, of course, was BSB at Thruxton. Unfortunately, Dave couldn't make it, but I know Martin Gittos and a number of other listeners. Martin, I did particularly remember because he was hitting Facebook with photos after photos, and it sounds like you had an absolutely great time. And it was good to hear people's impressions looking at Twitter and Facebook and the rest. Qualifying, which of course it only applies to race one with BSB, because race two, remember, is the grid layout is decided by your fastest lap during race one. But for race one, we had Josh Brooks, John Hopkins making his return, and Luke Mossy. Luke Mossy looking really good. He's a rookie. He's on a Kawasaki, and he is making that thing move. That was the front row. Dan Linford, James Ellison, and Peter Hickman were the second row. Christian Iden, Richard Cooper, and Danny Buckham were the third. Of course, we didn't have Jason O'Halloran. He was actually qualified in 16th, but because of the broken leg, he didn't make it. Now, the interesting thing was 17th place on the grid, one Shaky Byrne. Shaky had a really, really difficult qualifying. They were unlucky with traffic. They must have, you know, obviously took them a while to get a good setting. And he ended up, he was going to have to start race one from 17th. And wow, that was entertaining in itself. We set off and the race was red flagged in the early laps. I think it was lap 4 or 5. Richard Cooper's Kawasaki, basically the engine just died and decided to drop oil everywhere, which led to the crashes of James Ellison and Christian Iden. Christian Iden's was really dramatic. The bike just ran on its wheels as he kind of bailed out. I mean, running back to warn everybody. I think that was Iden. It may have been Ellison. But James Ellison's broken his wrist, and that meant he missed the two races. He couldn't make the restart. Christian Iden actually made the restart of the shortened race, which was only 15 laps, and that was won by Josh Brooks, who is looking masterful on the Milwaukee Yamaha R1. Dan Linford came in second. James Westmoreland, Westy, as Jack Burnicle affectionately calls him, came third. Shane Byrne was fourth. 17th to fourth on a circuit like Thruxton, which is, if you haven't seen it, do try and watch the races, you know, especially if you're abroad, find a way or at least just watch a video of people going around Thruxton. It's the fastest circuit on average speed of the whole BSB season, and there's no slow bits. It is just fast corner after fast corner after fast corner. There's one sort of semi chicane. It's absolutely mad, and it was also pretty attritional. Even the second shorter race, we lost Danny Buck and Tommy Bribal, Jenny Timoth, Riji Kianari, John Hopkins, whose bike just died, Peter Hickman, Christian Iden, and Sean Winfield all went out, and that's a lot. So we only had 18 riders finished. But it was great to see the crazy Aussie at the front. I say it was great to see because I've got him in my MCM Fantasy team. I know I keep going on about that. And then we went to race two. Now, the grid for race two was based on race one, and I haven't got it here, so I can't tell you. But I do know that it was similar, except Shane Byrne was much, much nearer the front. In fact, I think Shane Byrne might have been on pole. It was kind of a carbon copy. Josh Brooks was following for a while. I'm trying to think who he was following. Was it John Hopkins? It was John Hopkins. Took off like a bullet, doing really well. But unfortunately, Hopper crashed out this time. Danny Buchan, Jack Kennedy, Richard Cooper, Richard Westmoreland, and Peter Hickman again, we lost. But Josh Brooks, again, there was a massive battle going on behind him. And we had Shane Byrne, Luke Mossy, Dan Linford, Tommy Bridewell, who's a really aggressive rider. Great rider, but he's aggressive. Michael Laverty was up there this time, having done How did Lavers do? He was ninth in the first race. But we finish with Brooks, Byrne, Mossy, Bridewell, Linfoot, Laverty. And then, of course, we get to the standings. Now, I'm sure some of you out there, in fact, Dave normally does this, works out what the points would be if this was like a normal season. Well, we know what the points would be. It's 266 for Josh Brooks and 254 for Shane Byrne. But remember, when they get after Cadwell Park and Alton Park, which are the next two rounds, after Cadwell Park, which is the next round, they then go into the showdown, which is Alton Park, which is a three-race three-race weekend. Then they go to – sorry, I'm talking nonsense. It is after Cadwell and Alton. Alton is a three-race. After Alton, they go into the showdown. The top six riders all start on 500 points plus podium points. You get three for a win, two for a second, one for a third. Shaky at the moment has 41 podium points, so he'll start on 541 points, and Josh Brooks on 35. So he'll start with 535. So you think, well, hang on, he's 12 points ahead in normal points, but he'd start, if it was to start now, he'd start 6 points behind. I don't know. It was all designed, if you remember, it was all designed to bring up the, it was all designed to prevent the situation that happened when Leon Camier won a few years ago, 2009. And he'd won it in August. He'd won it by now, I think. And they just said, no, this is ridiculous. So, and of course, the next season was the one that was decided between Tommy Hill and John Hopkins by 0.06 of a second and would have been the closest season, you know, for years anyway. So it's a real shame, but hey, they think it works. Keep mentioning the MCN Fantasy League. The six at the moment in the showdown are Brooks, Byrne, Ellison, Easton, Laverty, and Bridewell. Tommy Bridewell has overtaken Jason O'Halloran after his non-run this weekend, and Jason's pretty much finished for that. Realistically, Dan Linfoot is on 93, so he's only 19 points behind Tommy Bridewell. Dan could get in. I don't think anyone else will. Sorry about the noise. The cat keeps trying to walk on my laptop keyboard. And if she does, do you want to just get down there, Bella? Yeah. There you go. Say hello to the listeners. No? She doesn't talk much. She just turns computers off. Dan Linfoot could catch Tommy Bridewell, possibly, depending how well they do. But he's 19 points behind. Below that, you've got Richard Cooper on 76. So that's a big ask. But you never know. You know, I mean, someone could do a Jason O'Halloran and drop out. I think the concern will be James Ellison. He should be safe. He's on 147 points. The next person, apart from Jason O'Halloran, who almost certainly won't be competing for the next round or two, is Dan Linfoot. So he's like 50 points behind. I can't see James Ellison being caught. It depends how bad the wrist break is for how long he'll be out. Hopefully, he'll be back for Cadwell. I believe it's his left wrist, so hopefully that won't be too bad. So, on to the MCN Fantasy League. God, this is really weird doing this on my own. Where's the banter? We've got a new leader. Well, since I last looked, because I've obviously been back in the UK for 3 weeks on leave with the family. I'm back now in the sandpit. But in the lead is Roberto Bibinho. Roberto's been a listener for many years, and we've had some good banter with Roberto. He is on 1,242 points, and the team is called, imaginatively, Roberto Bibinho, but all one word, without the space. A bit like Cameron's podcast network being called Podcast Network. We as a league, we're suffering a bit because we did have, I think the last leader we had was Steve James, possibly, I think it was about 24th overall. Roberto's 158th overall, so some people out in MCN Fantasy League land are doing very well. Second place is Steve James with MK Racing. We've seen Steve up there pretty much all season, 1238, so only 4 points behind. And only 2 points behind Steve is Roger England with Rovers 1883 on 1236. Leading, as he has done all season, the hosts mini league within the mini league is Scott Bolton. He's in 10th place. Team Moto Dog, 1194. Just 22 points behind him comes me in 20th with the Doha Donuts. But we've got to change. Jules, bless him, has had a disastrous weekend. He was on level points with me a couple of rounds ago. He's now, good Lord, about 86 or something points behind me, 88 points. He's on 1084, but having just got past him in third place, 48th overall, is Harry Lloyd, necessary faster, 1087. So Harry is 3 points ahead of Jules, who's joint 49th. Dave, 127th with 939 points with his straw bales mediocre race team. Jim, 184th with 788 points with race racing. And propping us up, as he has done all season, is good old Len Padilla, 203rd place, 712 points. But you're not the very bottom, Len. I think some of the people who are very bottom might have actually left the planet. I don't know. They're not there. Anyway. So what's coming up? We've got Indianapolis on the 9th of August, MotoGP. Scott Bolton is going to be there for MotoPod. If you want to meet Scott this weekend, if you're going to Indy, email meetup, all one word, MWETUP, at motopodcast.com. Those emails will get to Scott, and he'll be able to tell you where and when. Jim's mentioned before, what we probably do is Scott will probably tie up with one of our other media friends, maybe David Emmett or Andrew Wheeler or Scott Jones, one of the good people, so we can have a bit of a joint get together. It means we can all share and we can all pretend that you're all actually there for us and not our rivals, competitors, no, friends and colleagues. Now, we also this weekend have Moto America, who are running as the MotoGP support races. So that is going to be interesting. So there's an awful lot going on at Indy. And, you know, as we all know, even those of us who've never been there but would quite like to go for the experience, they do know how to put on a motor racing show. In other series, the next one is Cadwell Park BSB on the 23rd of August. And World Superbikes, we won't see them again till the 20th of September at Jerez. Where we're almost certain to see the title wrapped up and handed to Johnny Ray. After that, they've got somewhere else, and then they're coming out here to Qatar. So I will be definitely going to that, if only just to see Johnny, you know, do lap after lap, stand up wheelies, going, "Whee!" which would be fab. Okay, thanks, everybody. If you're a bike racing fan and you've got over your annoyance at the opening bit, you probably want to leave now. If you are not a bike racing fan, oh, sorry, you're all going to be bike racing fans. What am I talking about? If you would like to hear a little bit more from Cameron, do please go and look at lifeofcease.com or alexanderthegreat.life. Or just go onto iTunes and put Alexander the Great podcast, Life of Caesar podcast. Genuinely, really, really worth listening to. Like I say, you don't have to be a history nut. I am a bit of a history nut, but you don't have to be. It is just so entertaining. The pilot episode of Alexander, which is all you can listen to before you subscribe, and even I worked out the subscription because it is quite simple. It is very much talking about the sources from which they'll be drawing. But what I'd suggest you, listen to Caesar. And when Cameron and Ray record it, sometimes they'll record a Caesar episode, then they'll record a back-to-back, an Alexander episode, and they sometimes hilariously get confused who they're talking to, and they'll call Alexander Caesar or Caesar Alexander or something like that. So what I would suggest is if you want to listen to them in chronological sequence, listen to the Life of Caesar first. I know he came after Alexander historically, but I mean, listen to the Life of Caesar first. Then when you get to the end of that or catch up, then go back and listen to the Alexanders. If you listen to them together, you can end up as confused as Cameron and Ray sometimes get. Not that they get that confused. The other thing I really want to do is I'm just going to read you now the little ditty that I sent out to them, which just gives you an idea of what they're about. No, I'm not. That's that city, shall I? Yeah, okay. So this is about the life of Caesar. If Caesar floats your boat at all, and history yanks your string, then Ray and Cameron fit the bill. But listen, here's the thing. This ain't no stuffy schooltime show where po-faced teachers rule. These guys will tell it how it was, but in a way that's cool. They like to have a laugh, and sometimes that can get quite rude. But if you don't like what they say, just jog on, narky prude. For anyone who has a sense of humour and some style, this show will keep you laughing whilst informing all the while. You may not yet have heard about the town of Cinnabum, or how Nicomedes asked JC to his place for some fun, of Labienus, Cicero, rich Crassus and the rest, and poor old Pompey still convinced that he alone was best. So many shows that Ray and Cam have put out this last year, with 40 shows now in the can, the end is surely near. But we can stop this awful fate by urging them along to carry Caesar's story far beyond when he was gone. Augustus has to have his day, Mark Antony as well, of Philippi and Actium we want to hear them tell. So Cam and Ray, get out your books and prep some more damn shows. Don't make us pull a Sulla, or your wives become widows. So, Ollie Ford and Gary Shavitt, I know we're history fans, and this is going to be my first chance to say thank you very much to Tim Ford, Ollie's brother, who lives on Jersey, and gave Sharon and I a wonderful recommendation to go and visit a friend of his restaurant. If you are in Jersey, go and eat at Mark Jordan at the Beach. That's its name. You can Google it. Mark Jordan at the Beach. Mark is a Michelin-starred head chef at the Atlantic Hotel in Jersey, if you're rich. Which, if you go to Jersey, you might well be, go and eat there. But Mark's own place is absolutely fantastic. Really, really, really wonderful evening we had there. So thank you for that, Tim. And enjoy the history podcast. Oh, and bike racing. Thanks, everyone. I'm out of here now. And hopefully, and I'm sure you're hoping it too, next week. Gee, I'm not looking. But if you've got nothing good to say about this week's episode, say nothing. Or go down the pub with your mate and have a good whinge. Or you know, desubscribe. Or, I know, people don't subscribe, do they? They just download. If you've got something good to say, yeah, send it and make sure you put it to motopod@motopodcast.com so the other guys can read. Because when they listen to this, they'll be like, why did we let him do that? Well, it's a first and probably a last. Ladies and gents, I thoroughly enjoyed speaking to myself. And of course, Cameron. Thank you very much indeed, Cameron. And We probably won't have you on again because I doubt you'd have much you wanted to say. But thoroughly enjoyed it, and we will speak to you again soon. Keep the shiny side up and the rubber side down, and let's hope for some great racing this weekend. Vamos, as they say.